Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, March 31st. Our first article on the front page of the Decatur Herald and Review was written by Allison Petty. Fuel up now, Decatur gas tax starts Friday. Today is the last chance to fill up a tank in Decatur without paying the local motor fuel tax, which takes effect on Friday. The tax is 5 cents per gallon on unleaded gasoline and 1 cent per gallon for diesel fuel. Proceeds, estimated at $300,000 per penny, are meant to pay for repairs to city streets, which have suffered from less maintenance during the city's financial troubles. Gas stations within the city limits will collect the tax, then send the money to the city on a monthly basis starting in May. Business owners such as Jay Billingsley hope that they won't see much business lost to out-of-town stations as a result. At this point, there's not much we can do about it, said Billingsley, who voiced concerns before the council approved the tax in February. We have to buckle down and sharpen our pencils even more than they already were and test this out. The owner of Billingsley's Service Center and Towing at 1725 South Franklin Street, Billingsley and his family have been in the gas station business in Decatur for decades. His father, Dave Billingsley, owns the BP station at 2015 Mount Zion Road. Jay Billingsley said he is concerned about enforcement and auditing and hopes the city will be able to ensure that everyone is paying the tax correctly. The competitive disadvantage adds to an already higher sales tax burden, he said, because the city's 9% general sales tax rate is higher than adjacent communities in Macon County. But Billingsley said he is grateful for loyal customers. There has been negative feedback, but also there has been a lot of positive, and that kind of goes along with, hopefully, our long-standing family heritage in this community, that there is a personal connection with our close clients that we deal with on a normal basis, he said. We greatly appreciate and value those relationships. John Phillips, owner of University Service at 1096 West Main Street, said he thought competitors outside of the city limits would eventually raise their prices to match Decatur's, but keep the extra profit. Initially, though, he thought they might take advantage of the opportunity to attract more customers with lower prices. For 5 cents, very few people are going to drive very far out of their way, Phillips said. But if they have an alternative, if they're driving into the city every day from Mount Zion, they will buy their gas in Mount Zion if it's cheaper, or from Forsyth if it's cheaper, or whatever. Ultimately, though, Phillips said gas is a convenience purchase for many people. It's something you do on your way to somewhere or in part of your day-to-day process than it is something you shop for, he said. Morgan Distributing Incorporated is the only wholesale distributor of gasoline, diesel, propane, and lubricants in Macon County, said President Dan Butler. It was once among more than 20 such businesses, he said. The long-standing business on 22nd Street employs 67 people and delivers its products to farmers, businesses, and other bulk users. Because of the way the local motor fuel tax is structured, the company will not collect it from bulk users. Instead, those users will file monthly returns themselves. The company will be responsible for collecting the tax at its Pacific Pride station, where card-carrying users can receive a monthly bill for the gas they pump. For those who criticize the decision to tax diesel at a lower rate, Butler pointed out that diesel fuel already comes with additional tax burdens. For instance, the federal motor fuel tax for diesel is 24.4 cents per gallon, whoa, versus 18.4 cents per gallon for non-diesel. The state motor fuel tax for diesel is 21.5 cents a gallon, higher than the 19 cents per gallon for non-diesel. Both types of fuel are also subject to sales tax, which is charged as a percentage rather than cents per gallon. Even license plates cost more. An Illinois vehicle license plate cost $101, while he said one of the company's semi-truck licenses cost nearly $3,200. Butler said he doesn't support tax increases in general, believing that governments should control spending and manage waste to live within their means. But he said the city is well managed and has undoubtedly been hurt by population decline and businesses leaving at the state and local levels. In addition, he cited a long list of community players, from businesses to educational institutions, that are working together to make Decatur better. If the motor fuel tax helps improve the city and its infrastructure, that could attract more business and create job opportunities, which would be positive, he said. Butler said city officials were good to work with on the issue. They are willing to meet with us about our concerns, he said. The city's finance department is gearing up to process the returns, said Greg Ziantara, the city's finance director. It already collects the revenue from two other local taxes, the food and beverage and hotel use taxes. This is not all that complicated, but still, we'll have to spend a fair amount of time initially just making sure that things are being done correctly, he said. Obviously, we would be remiss if we're not effectively policing this. Residents should be able to see results later this year. City officials have said the local motor fuel tax proceeds would specifically address non-primary streets that otherwise wouldn't see repairs anytime soon. Public Works Director Rick Marley said his staff has developed a shopping list of 12 to 15 streets which they are working to prioritize. We're looking at spending $1 million this year, he said. The sad fact is, with the cost of asphalt and the cost of construction, $1 million just doesn't buy what it used to, unfortunately. The city will likely make a bigger dent in future years by using bonds or municipal loans to do more work quickly. One manager of a large fleet that won't be affected is the U.S. Postal Service. Ziantara said the only entities that are exempt from the tax are federal government agencies, which are excluded from the state motor fuel tax on which the city based its ordinance. Local governments such as the Decatur Park District and Sanitary District of Decatur are considered taxpayers. They pay the state motor fuel tax. They will pay the city motor fuel tax, he said. Library Board okays building transfer to city. One vote down, one vote to go. The Decatur Public Library Board approved an agreement Wednesday to transfer its facility at 130 North Franklin Street to the City of Decatur. The deal now requires support from the Decatur City Council, which is expected to consider it on Monday. It has been a long road for the library, which began efforts to find another owner for its building more than 2 years ago. It is a relief not to have the jockeying and the political fighting and concern about where we're headed, Library Board President John Phillips said after the meeting. It now provides a clear path for how to move forward, and so that's great. The vote was unanimous with one abstention from Board Member Greg Ziantara, who is the city's finance director. If the council votes in favor, the deal will take effect May 1st. The term of the lease is 20 years with possible extensions to 50 years. The library will continue to occupy its current space, paying rent that begins at $575,000 annually, including utilities. City officials plan to seek a tenant for unused space on the library's second floor and potentially in its annex. Initially, the library board planned to sell its building to the Decatur Public Building Commission, which would have leased the unused space to Macon County offices. But city council members did not approve that plan, and the city made its own offer in November. Negotiations between the two parties have been ongoing since then. City librarian Rick Meyer said he was happy that the library could move forward to other initiatives, such as a radio frequency identification, RFID, system for books that could save employees time and allow patrons the option of self-checkout. There are some partnerships in the works, he said, as well as plans to extend hours starting May 1st. One of the biggest positives for Meyer is a provision in the lease that requires rent not to exceed 22% of the library's tax levy. Essentially, that means the City Council could not significantly decrease the library's levy without also decreasing its rent. I think that's a great protection for the library, he said. Also, if the city decides to sell the building, the lease requires it to give the library 90 days' notice, pay for relocation costs, and ensure the library would not be closed for more than 2 weeks as a result of the move. One of the reasons for seeking to sell the building is the library's expensive capital needs, which the city would take over. That includes the dilapidated parking lot, which is scarred with cracks and potholes despite multiple patching attempts. The patching will likely go on a little longer, though, as the city isn't likely to resurface the lot without first deciding whether to tear down the annex building. According to the lease agreement, the city has 1 year to study the safety and potential use of the annex. Also, as part of the deal, Decatur Civic Center staff will take over maintenance of the library facility. Of the four remaining library maintenance employees, two have other jobs lined up, Meyer said. The Civic Center is expected to contact the other two about employment. We turn to the local section in the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up this article written by Ryan Voiles. Changes planned for county poker run raffle licenses. Changes in the state level will lead to changes at the local level for poker runs, a plan that would change the types of waiting periods and when waivers are required to obtain a license for poker runs and raffles will move forward after unanimous approval from the Macon County Siting Rules and Ordinance Subcommittee. Under the new plan, a license to operate a poker run would only be issued to bona fide religious, charitable, labor, business, fraternal, educational, veterans, or other not-for-profit organizations that have been in continuous existence for at least 5 years. The 5-year qualification may be waived for previously stated organizations if they are affiliated with and chartered by a national or state organization that meets the 5-year requirement. Passage from the county is just a step to bring its own language in line with changes made by the state last year, Assistant State's Attorney Michael Baggert said. Other changes in the ordinance are mostly there to clean up some language, including a more general definition of poker runs as a randomized game based on an element of chance. In conversation with others, County Board Member Matt Brown said the language should not impact any group that currently does these events from continuing them in the future. The language is similar to those who seek raffle licenses, though the 5-year period was already in the statute. The only change made in regard to raffles was clarification that those events are held for the sole purpose of providing financial assistance to an identified individual or group suffering financial hardship as a result of illness, disability, accident, or disaster. The cost of a license will not change, with the fee for a poker run license at $25, and a raffle license will be either $30 or $31, depending on the value of prizes given away. A combined raffle poker run license would be $31. The plan will be taken up by the full county board at its April 14th meeting. Deputy hears felon call ex-wife for chainsaws and gun. An article written by Tony Reed, an H&R staff writer. Police were listening on speaker when a Decatur felon who had earlier beaten his wife allegedly called her and warned his chainsaws and gun had better be waiting for him at home. Avers V. Douglas, 53, was arrested Saturday afternoon and booked on charges of possession of a weapon by a felon and possession of a firearm with a defaced serial number. Douglas has served numerous prison terms for convictions ranging from battery to possession of a weapon and is not allowed to own a gun. He is also facing a charge of domestic battery after police allege he had battered his 48-year-old wife Friday evening by slapping her across the face multiple times and then hurling a cell phone that hit her in the head. Sworn statements say Macon County Sheriff's Office deputies had been talking to the wife at the home of her parents Saturday morning when she received a call from Douglas, which she put on speaker. The arresting deputy wrote in the statements, "I heard Douglas tell his wife to get home immediately to make sure his chainsaws and gun were still there when she got home." His wife had a surprised look on her face when Douglas mentioned the gun. Police then searched the wife's car and allegedly found a semi-automatic pistol tucked in the front passenger door pocket with two rounds in the magazine and the serial number scratched off. His wife told the deputies her husband had been riding in the front passenger seat 1 hour before she had called police, and nobody else sat there in the meantime. She said she had heard him talk about having a gun but had never seen it. Douglas remained in the Macon County Jail Tuesday night in lieu of posting $125,000 bail. If he makes bail, he is ordered to stay away from his wife. In more crime and the courts news, inmate faces new charges for harassing domestic battery victim. Jade A. Morey, a 32-year-old jail inmate who is awaiting trial for domestic battery, is facing new charges after he was arrested for repeatedly calling the victim to try to persuade her to help him win his case. Morey had contacted the victim of his domestic battery case via phone from the jail more than 50 times, said a probable cause affidavit by Macon County Sheriff Sergeant Chris Thompson. During a phone call on December 15th, Morey told the victim, quote, "You have to write that explicative letter and tell them you were under duress and I didn't explicative touch you," end quote. Thomas wrote in his statement, "If I go to trial and I lose, they're going to slam me. Don't show up. They'll throw it out. Don't show up." All jail calls are recorded with full access by law enforcement. Morey also allegedly wrote letters to the victim via U.S. mail, which were addressed to another person to be forwarded to her. It is apparent that Morey communicated with the victim to intimidate her from testifying against him, Thompson wrote. As a result of the new charges of harassment of a witness and intimidation, Morey's bond was raised from $50,000 to $90,000. He will be arraigned on his additional charges by Wednesday. Morey had been held in jail since December 11th on felony counts of unlawful restraint and domestic battery with a prior conviction for violation of an order of protection and misdemeanor counts of criminal damage to property and interfering with a domestic battery report. In that case, he placed his arm around her head and neck to try to take her cell phone, then took her phone to prevent her from calling the police to report the battery. A witness told police essentially the same story. In an effort to persuade the victim's ex-husband to come to her residence, apparently to confront him, Morey threatened to kill the victim and her child if he did not arrive. Morey's trial in that case is scheduled for May 11th in circuit court. Morey has 16 prior criminal convictions since 2002, including 10 felony convictions, mostly for theft and burglary. Wow. Man arrested after he breaks into ex's house. A 25-year-old woman was asleep in her South Shores residence with her current boyfriend at about 3 a.m. Monday when she heard the doorbell repeatedly ring. She ignored it, but then heard the sounds of someone breaking in through her locked front door. Her ex-boyfriend, 31-year-old Martez D. Jones, then allegedly appeared in her bedroom, turned on the light, and tried to take a picture of her and her current boyfriend in her bed, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Police Patrol Officer Jacqueline Welton. Jones was arrested Wednesday by Special Deputy U.S. Marshal Lorne Sturtevant. He's being held in the Macon County Jail on $50,000 bond, pending his arraignment by Wednesday. His former girlfriend told police she received a series of blocked calls beginning at 2:45 a.m., which she assumed were from Jones. She had been experiencing continuing problems with Jones. After he burst into her bedroom, she told him she was calling the police. Martez then spit in her face and grabbed her cell phone before running out of the house, Welton wrote in her statement. The victim's current boyfriend told police he witnessed Jones spitting in her face. Welton wrote in her statement that she observed the front door frame was splintered and the striking plate for the lock mechanism was lying on the floor. The value of the victim's stolen cell phone was estimated at $550. Jones is being held on preliminary charges of domestic battery, bodily harm, criminal trespass to resident with persons present, theft, criminal damage of property, and interference of a domestic violence report. We turn back to some other local items, non-crime and courts related. This article written by Chris Lisvardi, who's a Decatur Herald and Review staff writer. Decatur Black Chamber reorganizes, installs new president. A reorganized group in Decatur is shifting its focus in an attempt to generate more opportunities for young blacks in the community. The Greater Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce, formerly the Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce, installed Tamara Fuller on Wednesday as its new president. She replaces Anthony Walker, who is moving to Bloomington and forming the Illinois Mid-Regional Chamber, of which the Decatur Group is an affiliate. "I want to bring the community together," Fuller said. "We can do better to support small business." Fuller said more needs to be done to reach the youth within the community by teaching about entrepreneurship and leadership. "We want to present the realm of different things they have to choose from," she said. "We want to let them know all the opportunities that are available." The Black Chamber is in the process of forming the Raising Outstanding Young Aspiring Leaders, or ROYAL, program. It has appointed Malik Abdullah, 19, to spearhead its efforts. "I want to make a change," Abdullah said. "It starts with the youth." The program will focus on five pillars, including academic excellence, cultural awareness, health and family awareness, civic responsibility, and leadership excellence, Abdullah said. Abdullah is looking to various organizations within the city to create partnerships and offer classes focusing on topics related to business. "It will soon start holding events," he said. Fuller said partnerships are important for the success of the organization as it focuses on the community and business along with health and wellness. She said going in a new direction can be difficult but necessary. The group plans to work with the Illinois Chamber of Commerce and U.S. Black Chamber, Fuller said. It is no longer affiliated with the Illinois State Black Chamber of Commerce, which formed a new chapter last year called the Metro Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce. "We will bring more to the city of Decatur," Fuller said. "Anything I can do to make the community better, I want to make it happen." One of the ways Fuller is looking to bring neighborhoods together is by creating community gardens. The first one on West Packard Street, which was officially started last week with a groundbreaking ceremony, is named the Emma Urban Gardens to honor Fuller's grandmother. She hopes the gardens can enhance the health and nutrition of community members. We've got time for this quick note in local news briefs. Vivian Goodman of Decatur Community Partnership and Decatur Police Detective Chad Ramey will speak at the next monthly meeting of the Human Service Agency Consortium at noon on Thursday, April 7th, in Central Christian Church, 650 West William Street. The public is invited to attend, but lunch is available to HSAC members only. Attendees are welcome to bring a lunch or to not eat at all. We're out of time for this first half hour of news from the Decatur area. Hope you'll hang on and return with us when we come back after this short break for the second half hour of news from the Decatur area.